How you doing? You, I know you were out of town this morning.
I was.
Where were you?
I was in Parker City, Colorado.
So what did you, what were you there eating?
Something that I didn't want to eat. Twix on a stick, shoved in a Twinkie, wrapped in bacon, deep fried in funnel cake batter, topped with confection sugar and crushed Oreo cookies. And that was just one out of the 15 things that I had to eat.
Where was this again?
Parker City, Colorado.
Oh, because pot is legal there. That's why they're eating it.
Yes.
This is the,
yes.
You know, people say that there are no ill effects, but...
there's some ill effects.
All
maybe.
Of a sudden, people are dipping Twinkies in batter.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, wrapping yeah. them in bacon.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. Well, here we go again. Did you read this? Researchers at the University of Aberdeen in England found that eating up to 100 grams of chocolate daily could reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease by 11% and risk of stroke by 23%. It could also reduce mortality risk by 25%. These studies... just keep coming. For the study, the research team collected and analyzed data from nearly 21,000 adults taking part in the EPIC Norfolk study. They also reviewed international published evidence on the links between chocolate and cardiovascular disease, involving nearly 158,000 people. The quote here is key. People who want to eat chocolate should not be worried too much about their cardiovascular health. We did not find any harmful effects of chocolate. If they want to enjoy chocolate now and again, the key is moderation. These beneficial health effects extend to milk chocolate, which is considered to be less healthy than dark chocolate. There doesn't seem to be any evidence for cutting out chocolate to lower the risk of cardiovascular disease. You know, the thing about these studies, they drive me batshit. Every 3 months, there's another study with different results. I mean, it's been proven that chocolate is good for you, but in moderation. I mean, coffee's good for you. Alcohol is bad for you. Wait, now coffee's bad for you. And a beer or glass of wine a day is actually will extend your health. But chicken will kill you. Stop eating food. Just drink water. Wait, they did another study. Water has impurities in it. You need to drink this water, high pH only. Wait a minute. They did another study now. High pH water will make your balls shrivel and your dick will fall off. So don't eat red meat. Oh, wait a minute. They just did another study. Red meat's okay, but only grass-fed. Hold on. Wait, they did another study. Grass-fed's okay, but only if the cows eat this type of grass, or massaged by Swedish women, or abstain from sex entirely, but maybe only on Wednesdays. I mean, holy shit, forget it. I mean, the article says it all. The key is moderation. Do you like chocolate? Eat some, a few times a week. You like coffee? Drink a couple cups of coffee a day. Don't worry about it. If coffee makes you jittery, don't drink coffee. Drink your beer, drink your coffee, eat your chocolate. And these researchers, go back to jerking off lab rats. Leave us alone. Stay out of our food. We're trying to eat. They just can't get off our backs. We're not going to kill ourselves consuming natural things like coffee and cocoa beans. Chocolate. They proved the health benefits of dark chocolate years ago, 13 times. Now 14. Goat balls. And then you see reports like this on the news.
Finally, a woman from Luzerne County had good reason to celebrate today.
Pauline Spagnola may have thrown back a few at her 100th birthday party at the Golden Living East Mountain Center near Wilkes-Barre. We say that because Pauline tells us the secret to her long life is a fair amount of booze.
I like her.
Booze.
Booze it up. Hey, you remember all that shit I said about Food Network? Like, I wasn't interested in it anymore. I don't have time to bring it up on my show. I'm just not interested. It's not even engaging anymore, that the hosts have all gotten so boring, I can't bring myself to talk about it at all. Yeah, well, forget I said all that.
The divorce between Bobby Flay and Stephanie March is getting intense, but the Food Network star is adamantly denying he had an affair. When Bobby and Stephanie announced their divorce earlier this month, Bobby was rumored to be romantically linked to several other stars, including January Jones and Giada De Laurentiis, as a reason behind the split. His rep said nothing regarding those claims, but boy, they are hell-bent on stopping the latest rumor that the 50-year-old Food Network star had a 3-year affair with his 28-year-old assistant. The rumor was written and then leaked specifically to try to insert this story into the press, and that's unfortunate, the rep's statement said. The statement also said the rumor was started by the couple's attorneys as a ploy to renegotiate Bobby and Stephanie's prenuptial agreement. According to the current prenup, Bobby is to pay Stephanie $5,000 a month. An attorney, though we don't know from which side, leaked the affair information in order to pressure a renegotiation. In the statement, Bobby's rep said the incident was, quote, unfortunate. For all the latest Hollywood news, keep it at hollyscoop.com.
Wow, dude. Bobby getting it done. January Jones? Not bad. Seriously, girls, though. I mean, is Bobby Flay even attractive? Because I'm a dude. My taste in men is horse shit. I couldn't be a girl. I don't find dudes attractive at all. I mean, maybe Clooney, all right? I get that. And Brad Pitt when he was younger and didn't look like a homeless person living in the jungle. And okay, maybe David Beckham and Artie Lang. But beyond that, no, I just don't get what you girls see in men at all. But look at Flay. I mean, is he that attractive? The red hair, the freckles, the cocky, shit-eating grin. Fucking asshole was mean to my friend Debbie. Yeah, we get it. You're Korean. Yes, and you're a McMidget who sells $30 enchiladas. Little Iris Fidget. I couldn't be happier to hear this. Not for his wife, of course. I mean, I feel horrible for her. And not just for this going public, but did you catch the part of the report where she's only getting like $5,000 a month? I mean, correct me if my math is wrong, but isn't that just like 60 grand a year? Is that the payoff for having to endure years of Bobby's McPP in your mouth? 60 grand? That wouldn't buy enough mouthwash for me. You could make more than that managing a McDonald's, and there'd be far less shame in that than admitting that you were married to that cocky little shit. Anyway, Food Network is back on my radar. Way to go.
Back in the 19th century, prisoners were given bread and water until they'd earned with good behavior the right to eat meat and cheese. Today, some prisons and jails feed prisoners a bland lump when they misbehave. They call it the loaf.
It's a food source. It contains all the vitamins, nutrients, and minerals that a human being needs. It's been approved by the courts. I've had it myself. It's like eating meatloaf.
Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark has used the loaf in his jail for 5 years. No one knows exactly how many institutions use it, but prisoners hate it.
Hey, did you get this loaf thing? Looks like three different dinners mushed together into a mound.
The Netflix show Orange is the New Black is based on the experiences of many former inmates who got the loaf in what's known as the SHU, or the isolation unit. The SHU is where Aaron Frazier had the loaf while he was serving time from 2004 to 2007 for counterfeit. He loathed it.
I'd have to be on the point of dizziness when I know I have no choice.
On the face of it, the loaf doesn't sound so bad. In Pennsylvania state prisons, it's made with potatoes, cabbage, oatmeal, and margarine. A county jail in Washington state makes theirs with meat, apples, and tomatoes. But prisoners who misbehave don't just get it once. They have to eat it for every meal, days or weeks at a time. That's why it works as a deterrent, says Sheriff Clark.
When we'd started to use this in the disciplinary pods, all of a sudden the incidents of fights, of attacks against our staff started to drop tremendously. You know, we'll often hear from inmates, please, I won't do that anymore. Please don't put me in the disciplinary pod. I don't want to eat Nutrilo.
You know, this is probably one of the greatest ideas ever. These prisons should hire every Hell's Kitchen wannabe chef reject that couldn't cut it and turn them into head penitentiary chefs. Let them experiment all they like on these prisoners. Sardines with pistachio chocolate ganache and 12-grain flatbread, every fucked up version of chicken masala that they couldn't slip past the goalie at their real job. You name it. Turn these felons into the ultimate guinea pigs. They deserve it. Hey, not sure if you noticed, I've been to the website lately, mylifeasafoodie.com. I redesigned the website, so it's mobile-friendly and allows me to update it with articles and recipes far more often now. I'm not sure if you checked it out, but hit it up, mylifeasafoodie.com. I'm trying to keep it fresh, so I'll post something there at least once, twice a week, and I'd like to continue to produce podcasts and videos and content that, you know, that I can as time allows. We've got a lot of new listeners, oddly enough. The damn show has been on, you know, hiatus for like a year, and people are still listening and picking it up. And I'll post recipes often. And one post that I did recently actually ended up being pretty popular on my Instagram feed. Do people still eat that? Did they do that meatless Monday thing? I know it was a fad for a while because I stopped doing it. The thing is this, I eat a lot of vegetables, okay, fruit, non-meat items throughout my day. But listen, this boy needs his protein. And after a heavy workout or a hard day, my body's craving it. And the way I see it, if you're eating enough vegetables throughout the week, there's no reason to take a day off of eating meat if meat is what you want. So I posted pictures of my lunch. It was a grilled vegetable pita sandwich that would give pretty much any healthy vegetarian a food boner. I grilled some eggplant, onion, and bell pepper, right? I just basically what I did was I just little salt and pepper, olive oil, and that was my marinade for the vegetables. I grilled it all, and then I split a piece of pita bread in half. I lathered on some white bean hummus that I had made earlier in the week, and then stuffed it with fresh spinach, all those grilled veggies, and some sliced cucumber for crunch. And it was just really delicious, and it took me less than 20 minutes to make. And it's on the website if you want to check it out. It's a post right underneath this website, underneath this episode. But staying healthy is not that hard. I mean, all you really have to do is use your head. I mean, try to drink at least a quarter water a day, at least. Eat 3 servings of vegetables, 3 servings of fruit, mix in some carbs, some grains to get fiber, and cram down as much protein as you can. Stay the hell away from processed food as much as you can, but don't be Hitler about it. And your body craves shitty drunk food, eat the shitty junk food. You're not going to hell for cheating now and again, as long as you don't make it a habit. And people get Nazi about this shit, and I don't know. I mean, I think that's why they end up falling off the wagon and then staying off of it, because, you know, health food and healthy people become the enemy. I mean, that stupid cleanse crap. I mean, people, you're really killing yourself with that. Don't cleanse. There's no reason to cleanse if you're eating properly. Your body does not like that any more than it did all that shit you shoveled into it to force the cleanse in the first place. Be kinder to yourself. You see these people, they're on your Facebook feed all the time. Third day of this cleanse, and man, do I feel awesome. Bullshit. You're pissing out your ass, your stomach is growling 24/7 because you're starving. And you're so grouchy, everyone mistakes you for a pit bull with jewelry. Detox and cleanse diets, they're bad for a number of reasons. They're a waste of time, for one thing. And they're rarely clear as to what it is that they're actually removing. I mean, what toxins? From where? And how are these toxins being removed? They never have an answer for that. They can tell you, but there's no proof behind it. I read a piece, it was in Shape magazine a couple of years ago, where a doctor had challenged a room of, it was like more than 90 fitness professionals in this room. And she asked them to show her any evidence in humans that lemon, for example, detoxifies your liver. Nobody could come up with anything. I mean, you want to cleanse? Try this. Start eating a shit ton of fiber and drink as much water as you can consume in a day. And what doesn't come flying out of your body belongs to stay in there. And just start living a cleaner life. And this is coming from a guy who still loves making bacon, pork rillettes, confit, all that Frenchy stuffy shit. I love it, and I eat it. I just don't go nuts about it. And I exercise. I mean, don't give me that bullshit about, I don't have time, I pick up my kids, I gotta do homework with them and make them dinner, no time in my day. Hey, guess what? I have those excuses now. And if you see me lately, I'm even thinner. I've shaved almost 2 minutes off my mile. And kids haven't changed a damn thing for me. That homework is a bitch, though. Holy shit, Common Core. Pain in the ass, don't get me started.
Warren Buffett joked that no one's smiling at Whole Foods. Investors aren't either. Buffett made the comment at his recent annual shareholder meeting. It was a response to a question about his diet and the fact that he invests in Coke and owns Dairy Queen. Maybe Buffett's onto something. Whole Foods just reported lousy sales that missed forecasts. Same-store sales growth is slowing, and that's a big problem. The stock is plunging. Whole Foods realizes it must do something to attract more consumers, particularly younger ones. is going to be opening up a new chain, hasn't named it yet, that's going to cater to younger customers with cheaper products. That is key. Everyone calls Whole Foods Whole Paycheck because how expensive it is to buy your kale and spelt there. Whole Foods is also struggling because there's a lot of competition now. Even though Buffett may not like organic, it is a legitimate big business. You've got Trader Joe's, Kroger among supermarket chains, and ironically enough, Costco is now big in organic. Costco is a stock that Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway owns, and Vice Chairman Charlie Munger, he sits on their board.
Wait, oh, look at this. Look, what timing is this now? Look what just popped up on my news feed. Another study repeating decades-old knowledge about natural food and acting like it's news. Daily nuts intake makes you live longer and prevents cancer. Now, I wonder how much this one cost. These days, studies on diets have become focused on finding miracle foods that can improve life through various fronts, with fruits like avocados and blueberries often being called the next major breakthrough in healthy eating. But now nuts' protein ingredients are making a great case to gobble on almonds, walnuts, peanuts, and the like. Oh, brother. According to Science Daily, the latest nuts nutrition discovery came from the Oxford University Press in a study published earlier this month on the International Journal of Epidemiology. A relationship of tree nut, peanut, and peanut butter intake with a total cause specific mortality, a cohort study and meta-analysis. I don't even know what that means. That sounds compelling, though. In total, the average on lower risk mortality within 10 years was 23%, varying according to the condition. It was 45% for neurodegenerative disease, 39% for respiratory, and 30% for diabetes. Ugh. You know, I'm pretty sure I brought this up on the show before. I'm pretty sure I was crucified for it then, too. People want me to be the bacon, beer, and butter boy, you know. But this Mediterranean diet, my friend Afaf from Syria, she told me that their diet was guaranteed to help you live longer, and I believed it the minute she started talking, because it just makes sense. They eat primarily plant-based foods, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes and nuts, lots of fish, olive oil, not butter, and lots of herbs and spices, and they go very easy on the salt. Mediterranean diet. Mediterranean as in the Middle East, as in since the dawn of man. Dawn of man as in long before there was an Oxford, a university, or a press, or studies, or even science. I mean, Jesus, he was on the paleo diet, loved it. Dude was in great shape, walked marathons in the desert, PR'd every day, fueled his body with a fish and a loaf of bread. Jesus, epitome of health. And there wasn't a day that I entered a Afaf's house and didn't see a bowl or two of nuts laying around. I mean, nuts are an awesome source of protein, full of healthy fats. And every person in the Middle East would laugh in your face if you read them a report like this and said it like it was news. I live and breathe by this nutrition spectrum that I read and laid out, and the first thing on it is nuts. I'll share it with you here because I think it really does show how simplified food can be. And here are 12 things that I try to put into my body every day, or at least every other day, and why I think they're important. Okay, first thing, nuts. They improve blood cholesterol levels, lower blood pressure, and help my body fight cancer. And if you know my history at all, I say fuck you to cancer every chance I get. Eggs, they help build muscle, improve my blood pressure, and aid in muscle functioning. Healthy fats, grapeseed oil if you want to cook on high heat, avocado, butter, healthy fats, and yes, butter is healthy as long as you don't go all Paula Deen on us and shovel a stick of it in your face. It actually helps improve blood cholesterol levels, lowers our blood pressure, and again, helps fight cancer. Now, who knew that butter would help you fight cancer? Well, now you know. Seafood, salmon, sardines, shrimp, among my favorites. Good for your heart, fights cancer, boosts brain function.
You know fish is great brain food. You know you should fish for a whale. Out of here.
Thank you, Mo. Also prevents eye damage and helps build muscle. It's a protein. More protein. There's chicken and pork, beef. I mean, eat some protein and you won't be all that hungry later. It does satiate you very well. Helps build muscle. Beef's another thing that I try to eat at least once or twice a week now. Fruit. I eat a lot of fruit. Another thing that will help you make you feel full after you eat it is all that sugar keeps diabetes at bay, has cancer-preventing qualities, helps with weight loss, lowers blood pressure again. Whole grains like brown rice and quinoa, not quinoa. I just hate how it's spelled. I should just spell it quinoa. Keeps your belly full. I mean, that's another thing. It makes you feel full after you eat it. Improves blood pressure, reduces the risk of heart disease. And dairy products, if you're not lactose intolerant and can hold it down without browning out your shorts, strengthens bones. Or maybe not that one. Beans, legumes like black beans, green peas, edamame beans can help you if you're trying to lose weight. Eat some of these and you'll feel really full, really fast. Lowers your blood pressure, reduces the risk of cardiovascular disease. Green vegetables, we eat the hell out of these in our house. Arugula, salad, spinach, broccoli, you name it, if it's green we're in. Helps lower the risk of diabetes, lowers blood pressure, aids in weight loss, helps you feel full, and also helps keep things a little regular. The 12th thing on my list are my ritual liquids that I have throughout the day. Coffee or green tea, maybe a beer during a ball game, or as Michelle and I are winding down from our day, all in moderation. Even though I can have days when my coffee intake might exceed 4 to 5 cups, I try my best to keep it around there without getting into too much trouble. And the key that I've read, learned, and try to live by is to eat the rainbow. The more colorful the natural foods that you consume are in your diet, the wider variety of nutrition that your body will get. And outside of dried beans, rice, pasta, and olive oil, the majority of the items I just rattled off are found where? The outside aisles, not the inside aisles.
For the Jamie Oliver's Food Revolution Day, our correspondent Tig Enright has been to meet Jamie Oliver, and he knows exactly what this food revolution is all about, and he's about to enlighten me here in our London studio. So what exactly is the food revolution?
Well, the food revolution is Jamie Oliver's long-running campaign, I suppose, to get us all eating more healthily. This year, what he's doing differently is launched a petition, and he's taking that petition to the G20, calling for it to be made a human right for children to be taught about, you know, sensible eating, cookery skills in schools. And, you know, the numbers behind this really are quite startling, even from a financial perspective. You know, it costs the world $2 trillion a year to treat obesity-related illnesses. And the WHO says that there are now 42 million children all over the world under the age of 5 who are either overweight or obese, and that this generation of children could actually be the first for 2 centuries who won't actually live longer than their parents. So it's an important message, and here's what he told me when I caught up with him a little bit earlier.
This petition is a global petition to make it a child's human right to have access to food education in school. It's very, very simple. It's the best use of any government's money or any taxpayer's money. It's kind of getting children at their most malleable in the place where the infrastructure of school is already working 190 days of the year. And this is where we can, this is at the front line of the fight against obesity and diet-related disease. So to put it in context, when diet-related disease is the biggest killer in most countries on the planet, this needs to be the kind of antidote, really.
What do you want to see happening in schools? Just give us an idea what children to be taught.
First of all, if any government on the planet wants to act like a parent, it needs to commit to food education in school. That, I mean, that's the basic. Once we get that, and we got that in Britain in September last year, then we need to make sure that the collateral and all the support for the teachers and the funding is correct. And then the content is beautiful and wonderful. But most importantly, like, food education can help support the rest of the curriculum, whether it's maths, history, you know, science, biology. So, but it's really, I mean, really and honestly, it's at the front line against reversing diet-related disease. That's what I'm passionate about.
Listen, I talked about protein earlier, and what most men eat, what most people eat when they decide to consume protein or they think about protein, are animal products. Our skin, our bones, our hair, and nails are composed mostly of protein. And, you know, if you look at guys who are muscle builders, guys who work on their bodies, they're doing a lot of this. They eat a lot of protein. They consume a lot of it because it helps them build muscle. I mean, Rocky chugged eggs before he ran for a reason. But there's more than that. What they found is if you're trying to, like, if you're living an active lifestyle and you're working out and you're really trying to keep your body healthy and to keep yourself full, you know, they want you to consume, like an average athlete, a regular, say, a highly trained athlete will consume about 3/4 of a gram of protein per pound of body fat. A normal person should consume a half a gram per pound. So let's say if you work out 3 to 5 days a week for about 45 minutes to an hour each time, you're going to need about half a gram per pound. So a 180-pound guy is going to need around 80 grams. If you're trying to lose weight, protein is still really crucial. The fewer calories that you consume, the more calories that should come from protein. And that's what the professionals are saying. I mean, you need to boost your protein intake to between a half to three quarters of a gram per pound to preserve calorie-burning muscle mass. And it's not all the same. A lot of foods, like nuts and beans, can provide a good dose of protein, but the best sources are dairy products, eggs, meat, and fish. Animal protein is a complete protein. It contains the right proportions of the essential amino acids that your body can break down on its own. And it's possible to build complete protein from plant-based foods, like if you combine legumes, nuts, and grains at a single meal, like they say rice and beans, that makes up a complete protein. But you need to consume 20 to 25% more plant-based protein to reap the benefits that animal protein provides, which is why people go to it. And it's not that tough to get it into your system. Chicken, turkey, or tuna, 3 ounces will give you anywhere from 15 to 20 grams of protein. 2 eggs will give you 20 grams of protein. If you take, like maybe if you like Greek yogurt, a 5 ounce serving of Greek yogurt, 15 grams of protein. For me, I like to have fun with it because I'm a meat eater. I'm a carnivore, true and true. So for me, it's like I can consume meat without feeling guilty about it as long as the meat is lean. So chicken breast, you know, try to find ways to make chicken breast interesting. Eggs for sure. I love having eggs. And I'm going to share a recipe with you here in a second. But there's a lot of different ways of doing this. And if you're trying to really stay fit, timing is really a key. I mean, when do you normally eat most of your protein? At dinner, right? That means that you could be fueling muscle growth for only a few hours a day and breaking down muscle the rest of your time. Your body can process only so much protein in a single sitting. I mean, you can't consume all your protein at dinner and expect that that's going to do it. By consuming 90 grams of protein at one meal provided the same benefit as eating only 30 grams. It's like a gas tank. This professor was saying, there's only so much you can put in to maximize performance, and the rest just spills over. So eating protein in all 3 meals, plus snacking a couple times a day on proteins like cheese, beef jerky, or you know, if you can drink some milk, will help you eat less overall. And people who start the day with protein consume 200 fewer calories a day than those who eat carb-heavy breakfasts, like that Grand Slam, and pancakes and stuff. But you have to have, I mean, work out. If you're going to work out, you need fuel. You can't just, I mean, it's a common misnomer. This friend of mine who's a bodybuilder and a trainer, he says the number one mistake that people make is they stop eating. They think they can work out and not eat, and that's going to help. The body does not like that, and it starts to shut down. It says, listen, you're not going to feed me? Okay, then I'm not going to burn anything. It knows it's not going to eat, so it gets used to that, and that ends up hurting your metabolism. What you really want to do is start your day with protein. And for me, the best way to do that is with eggs. So I make omelets. I'll make scrambled eggs. There's 50 different ways you can make eggs. I like to consume anywhere from 3 to 4 eggs when I really want a good protein boost. And the best way for me to do that is with an omelet. And here's this great omelet I love making. It's really healthy, full of protein, and very quick and simple to make. Beat 4 eggs with about 2 tablespoons of milk. Add a pinch of salt and pepper, a little handful of parsley and some mint, and maybe some tarragon or thyme, whatever herbs that you have laying around, some fresh herbs. And get a medium nonstick pan over low heat. Add a little bit of butter or olive oil to the pan. And then about a minute or two later, when it's nice and warm, throw in the eggs, cook them a little bit, and dollop in. This is what I like doing here. I throw in some fresh tomato and about 2 to 3 ounces of goat cheese that I'll put in there. I'll fold it over and let it finish cooking, roll down to the plate, and I've got a nice 4-egg omelet. And guess how much protein is in this sucker? Around 35 grams. Now, you want to get your day started on a real good hit and then go work out and feel like you've really eaten. This omelet's brutal. It's fantastic. It's full of protein, very good for you, very delicious. And again, you can play around with those herbs all you like. But the tomatoes and the goat cheese just make it. And the people are afraid to eat before bed. I don't know why, but they think if you eat, you're just going to lay there and you're gonna put on pounds while you're sleeping. I mean, some studies have linked weight gain and late night eating together, but it's usually because what people end up eating at night is, you know, bad things like cookies or ice cream. Well, you can't eat that and then go lay down. But you can have, like, you know, a little bit of maybe some granola, or you can have some yogurt, or maybe a piece of fruit. You just can't make poor food choices. Eating a snack full of protein before you hit the sack, it's a bonus recovery window that will stimulate muscle repair. And if you can handle these protein powders, I can't, because most of them are made with whey and that's got dairy in it, and my body just starts to do funny things with it. But if you can handle protein powders, that's a really simple way of getting protein. Usually that's anywhere from 22 to 25 grams in a scoop. And you can mix it with water or with anything else. You can add it to something that has a lot of protein, and that will increase your protein count.
Bare hands picking up expired meat from the factory floor and then using it in the product. Gross. It's another food scandal in China. This time, an American-owned factory accused of selling tainted meat to McDonald's, Starbucks, KFC, Pizza Hut, Burger King, Papa John's. Which brings us to this: the five grossest, oddest, and most devastating China food fails. Number one, Walmart recalling donkey meat in China, not because it's, well, donkey meat, but because it was tainted with fox meat. Number two, so-called sewer oil. An undercover investigation in 2010 found that 1 in 10 meals in China was cooked using recycled oil. That is, oil that was scavenged from drains under restaurants. Number three, glow-in-the-dark pork. Chatter Online dubbed it avatar meat. Chinese health officials said the meat was contaminated by phosphorescent bacteria, and it was still safe to eat. Number four, American pet owners outraged when tainted pet food killed some 8,000 animals. Chinese pet food makers swapped out more expensive protein ingredients for a cheaper but toxic chemical. And number five, dairy companies pulled that same bait and switch in baby formula, causing the worst food poisoning case in history. In 2008, contaminated infant formula killed 6 babies and sickened 300,000. International outrage, and dozens of countries banned imports of Chinese dairy.
Well, on that note, I think my work here is done. Hungry for Chinese food or food from China? Yeah, me too. That's disgusting. Listen, thank you for listening. Come again soon. Please drive safely. Audio in this episode courtesy of ABC, PBR. I mean, did I say PBR? NPR, not Pabst, and CNN. Music in this episode from Bass Nectar. If you like the music, please buy it in the iTunes store. Join our Facebook group, follow me on Twitter, and get caught up on everything on the website at mylifeasafoodie.com. Until next time, my name is Phil, and this has been My Life as a Foodie. Ciao.